We all have grown up in a very dominant narrative that started with the scientific revolution, which was a revolution in cause and effect. And that revolution made it possible to create machines. And machines are ordered environments, cause and effect environments, effectively. And we modeled our education on the factories. So in our education, we learned to work with problems that are cause and effect problems. And that's very important. However, many problems in the world are complex, like relationships between human beings, leadership is complex, company cultures are complex. And what we tend to do is to push everything in the ordered cause and effect environments, domains. And then you can make things actually worse.
Welcome to the Work Matters podcast. This is your host, Thomas Bertels. In this episode, I'm joined by Bodevin Birch to talk about Kinefin, complexity, and what it means to lead when there's no single right answer. Kinefin, developed by David Snowden, is a sense-making framework. It helps leaders diagnose whether the problem they're facing is clear, complicated, complex, chaotic, or confusing, and choose an appropriate course of action. Bodevin brings more than 35 years of experience working with leaders and teams around the world, combining complexity science, somatics, leadership development, and practical organizational change. I hope you enjoy the conversation, and if you do, please don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. Bodevin Birch, welcome to the Work Matters podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So really excited to talk to you today about, I thought it was called Sinefin, but you corrected me, it's called Kinefin, which is a framework that Dave Snowden developed. So let's talk about Kinefin. What is Kinefin? What's the idea behind it?
So Kinefin is a framework, and Dave Snowden makes the distinction between a model and a framework. A model tries to represent the world. So the model comes first, and it tries to be a representation. But a framework is something you look through. You look through the frame. So the world unfolds, and how can the world unfold? His original framework basically suggests that there are five domains that you can potentially recognize in the world. The world is clear, then you have a kind of a best practice. The world needs a little bit of analysis for you to make sense of it, because it's a sense-making framework. Then you make an analysis, or you hire experts to make the analysis. Or the world can be complex, meaning things are so intertwined that there is no clear way forward. There is also no clear outcome. You have no control over outcome. It's also possible that the world is chaotic. So there's maybe an earthquake, or there may be suddenly a financial crisis that's hitting you. And then you need to impose order. You need to do something. And the fifth domain, not to be forgotten, is the confused domain, which is that you're experiencing the world and you're confused. And what is beautiful in this framework is that it's totally legitimate to be confused. So that's the idea behind the framework. And then there are some heuristics, some protocols.
So how did you get first introduced to Snowden's work?
I was doing a workshop together with a colleague, Jill Hughes, for ING Bank in the Netherlands. And she had come across the network and she said, you really should look into this. And that's how I found this out. This was probably 2001, 2002. And I had been a student on complexity science for quite a while. At that time when I was really studying it, I was an assistant professor at the Erasmus University Rotterdam. But when I saw the framework, I immediately grasped the significance of it. And the reason that it's significant is that we all have grown up in a very dominant narrative that started with the scientific revolution, which was a revolution in cause and effect. And that revolution made it possible to create machines. That was the Industrial Revolution. And machines are ordered environments. cause and effect environments effectively. And we modeled our education on the factories. So in our education, we learned to work with problems that are cause and effect problems. And that's very important. However, many problems in the world are complex, like relationships between human beings, leadership is complex, company cultures are complex. And what we tend to do is to push everything in the ordered cause and effect environments, domains. And then you can make things actually worse, because those domains are really focused on control and order. Whereas relationships, leadership, many problems in society, in companies are in fact complex. So seeing that, I realized the significance. And that's when I started to read more about it, the articles from Dave Snowden. And then I actually met him, I think it was 2007 in Calgary when he did a workshop.
So what do you do if you're having a complex situation? How does Snowden's framework help? Besides recognizing that not all of these problems are the same.
So one of the ways we use the framework in organizations, for example, is to actually plot the domains and ask people to, from their perspective, to put a dot or a cross where they think the problem they're dealing with is actually living. Is it a clear problem? Like, for example, a complaint is coming in from a customer. Well, you've probably worked that out. So there's a standard operating procedure, there's a best practice, right? But if the problem is a little bit more complicated, for example, in general, about 85% of your clients pay the invoices on time, but there is a consistency of 15% not paying on time. And you're wondering why. And then you don't have a best practice. You have to do some analysis, right? So in the first instance, you sense the problem, you categorize it. Okay, this is a client complaint. We have a best practice for that. But here, you have multiple ways to go at it. You could call in the accountants and say, listen, 15% don't pay on time, figure it out. Or you could say, let's create a Lean Six Sigma project and involve the various departments that are involved in eventually creating the invoice and let them analyze the problem. So you sense, analyze the problem, and you figure out a good practice. If the problem is complex, like for example, how do we increase customer satisfaction? Why is that a complex problem? Because it doesn't just depend on you as what you do as a company, but it depends also what the competitors do. It may also depend on what the general economy is doing, right? In that case, there isn't so much a good or a best practice, but you need to find what we call an emergent practice. And here it's very important that you then use many people and you involve them in opening the collective intelligence, and you have them work what we call a complex problem and say, okay, you know, what do you think we should do? What is your perspective? What are the issues? And you have various tools to get all the perspectives on the table, and then you begin to recognize patterns. So it's important to find out where people perceive the problem to be. And there is kind of a general rule. If there is a discussion between experts, between the complex domain, it's complex or it's complicated, you always are recommended to default to the complex problem because it's obviously not clear. And it can be in what we call also the in-between space, that the problem is neither fully complex, but it's neither fully complicated. And we call that the liminal space. And then you need to work with the collective intelligence, and you need to work with what we call safe to explore experiments. So whereas on the right side of this framework, complicated and simple or clear, you analyze, you actually in the complex domain have to act yourself into a better way of understanding and feeling what the problem actually is. Now, you have to really clearly see that many consultants try to sell recipes. And in organizations, we organize for control and accountability. So we want to hold an individual accountable. And that those are all kind of things that push the problem into the more ordered domains. But what we are saying in a complex domain is that context actually matters. And if you then recommend, well, let's do safe to explore experiments, you run into the dominant systems that run a company, for example, punishment and reward systems. If the experiment doesn't work and is perceived by upper management as I failed, I get punishment. So then you actually create fear in the organization. And this is very, very important, because if you really want to work a complex problem, you have to be willing to experiment. Then you also have to tell your people, listen, an experiment has no failure as long as you learn from it. So in that way, the use of the framework can be very, very useful in terms of diagnosing the type of problems we have, and then determining how are we going to address the problem.
So let's take an example. These days, everybody's talking about AI. So let's talk about AI. It's certainly not clear, right? It is complicated, complex, and maybe even confusing. So how would Snowden's framework be useful? What kind of things might I consider to make sense out of AI for my organization?
So Dave Snowden would always recommend that you do multiple experiments in an organization and then learn from the experiments what is working. And if it works, you amplify. And if it doesn't work, you dampen. In the case of AI, what we could suggest is, okay, let's give people some leeway, some room to experiment in marketing, in accounting, and maybe in R&D or in manufacturing, to play with AI. And let's reconvene after 2 months and let's find out what has worked and what has not worked. And based on these experiments, you learn something about the organization. You might, for example, learn that AI works very well with very structured projects or structured problems. But you might find out that with much more unstructured, much more complex problems, it can give you some pointers, but it won't be able to give you the right answers. So we are finding out at the moment that AI cannot really invent things. And of course, the big weakness of AI, what human beings have, is human beings have intuition. So you may find out by doing these multiple experiments more information about where will AI work and where will it not work for us. And based on that, you would then make your next step. And then you might, for example, say, oh, it looks like in legal and in accounting, it works great. Let's put our money behind that because we'll be getting some productivity improvement. And you can then define projects. In other words, you start out complex, but because you now learn something, you can create projects that are much more structured and are much more on the right side of the framework in the complicated domain. And so that is what certainly I would recommend when you are playing with AI, because AI, the introduction of it and how it will change, is very unpredictable. And in a complex domain, you always have what we call unintended consequences. So you need to be also looking at, okay, if we do an experiment, will I risk the existence of the company? So you want to do some failure mode and effect analysis, or really looking at the risks. And if you say, well, you know, if something goes wrong here, it's not going to disrupt the company as a whole, then let's try something.
I had an interesting conversation on another podcast episode with a lady who works in HR. We talked about the hiring process and how horrible the experience is. It's become really a dehumanized experience. And I think AI is quite frankly having a part in that. Now, taking a look through this framework, it seems like when people, for example, use AI to screen resumes, it's complicated, so they're more on the complicated side, but they take a solution and they implement it and they're doing it for efficiency reasons. But then it turns out it's actually complex because now you have the candidates also, right, using AI to tweak their resume, so you get a lot of false positives. So that I think is maybe an example for that we oftentimes mistake complex problems for complicated problems and ignore these second order effects.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, always when you work with people, you know, people are complex. First of all, we are still a biological organism, and the body itself is highly complex. And if you just look at relationships, you know, everybody's in a company, we try to actually treat people as kind of machines, as standards, right? But if you wake up after a poor night's sleep, that's going to affect how you perform that day. If you're going through a divorce, that's going to affect your performance. However, if you're going to get married next week, you may be in a state of euphoria and be very enthusiastic and open. So people themselves are complex. And that's why I believe that to treat them as a resource only, like human resource management, well, you're just a resource, is a big mistake if your aim is how do I bring out the best in people to serve the goals that the mission, the vision of our corporation? You need a much more complex oriented approach rather than a much more standardized machine type of approach. And I'll give you one more example because I'm also trained as a somatic coach. So I work with the body that accelerates learning. But our body has a nervous system that has helped us survive evolution. And our nervous system has a disposition, a preference for being fearful, for being anxious. So if we feel that the environment is safe, we can do anything we like, we can make jokes. But if there is hierarchy in the room, and if there is a punishment system, people will default to being very, very careful. So they go to contraction rather than being very open. People become very careful with what they say. And so all of that makes things very, very complex. So if your aim is, how do we bring out the best in people? You need an approach that is really consistent with the complexity of human beings and the kind of problems that they are going to deal with. And if you rate people on linear scales, and say, well, we're going to have our performance management review at the end of the year. And your boss comes with these 5-point or 7-point scales, and you can only score less. That will induce fear. I've done masterclasses in corporations. I always ask, who here in the room loves to be assessed for the performance review by their manager? Can you please raise your hand and say, oh, bring it on. It's such a wonderful performance review system. No hands. Then I asked them, who loves to review your direct reports? Not a single hand goes up. And I've got rooms of 200 to 300 people. Why? It's against the nature of our human beings. We would love to belong to a group because we can survive better. It's not survival of the fittest. It's survival of those who can cooperate, collaborate, and then you become fit. So we need to look in organizations how we promote that in order to bring out the best in people. And my firm belief is that we need a very, very different approach to leadership, to management in these times that are so, as you mentioned earlier, much more complex.
So organizations are based on this exploitation model. Many organizations are. We found a formula and we're going to squeeze the last penny out of it. We're going to optimize, optimize, optimize. And so we're living in this maybe complicated world, but mostly clear. Let's just execute. Now, these days, everybody realizes we're living in a complex world. We're being disrupted, right? Some industries definitely more than others. So you need a different way to make sense again. You need to step back and we look at the picture. But to your point, that doesn't work if it's a top-down culture, everybody's scared, everybody. The other piece is it's by default not a process where you know what the endpoint is going to be.
what you're now bringing up, that in a complex problem, if you're trying to tackle that, there is no ownership over outcome. There are just too many variables. Now, in organizations, we try to always allocate who's responsible for this. And you acknowledge the world is complex, you're basically saying context matters. So you cannot just blame people. Blaming actually doesn't help very much. So this is one of the reasons why I believe we need to completely redesign and discover how we can lead in complex times in organizations. And what does actually leadership and management actually look like in that kind of world? You used another important word, right? That optimization. So if you are on the right side of this framework, the clear domain or the complicated domain, you know what the outcome is that you want. So you can say, I'm here, we need to go there, there is a gap, and now we can optimize the process. And we are very good at that. I mean, you are a Lean Six Sigma expert, and I've done those kind of trainings as well and taught Lean Six Sigma. So we can optimize. But human beings in complex situations are not about optimizing, but about satisfying. I ask people very often, who has children? Many hands go up, right? Can you guarantee, can you optimize whatever you do for your children? The values you give them, you teach them, the education you give them, can you guarantee that they will be successful in life? Not a single hand goes up. Then I ask a more provocative question. Who here has been divorced? And a number of hands go up. I said, what's the problem with you? Couldn't you predict this? No, you can't. Because a relationship with a partner is a constant play, a discovery. You know, you feel at some point there is enough basis to try, and then you go, and then you discover. But there is no guarantees about outcome. And this is important. I have done leadership trainings and then with leaders, and they would say, oh, I've got this weak guy in my sales team. Yeah. And I said, oh, he's weak? Yes, this is not good and that is not good and blah, blah, blah. And I said, are you the manager? Yes. I said, then you are in relationship with this direct report, correct? Yes. The outcome of a relationship is always the product of the interactions. So your direct report is not in this workshop. You are. Can you tell me what do you contribute or not contribute that contributes to the statement that you made that that person is weak? This is a very different way of working with people. Relationship matters.
I mean, most organizations are maybe 80%, 85% in the complicated, clear domain. And then 15% of the time, we got to operate in the complex world. The complex world has a different set of rules. You can't dictate the logic from the top down. So how do you actually do that? Because if people are scared from Monday to Thursday, but on Friday, we all bring them together to make sense out of what we're going to do with AI, and we're all going to be equals in the room, and the answer is going to emerge, that seems like a difficult dance.
Yes, well, it seems difficult. Simply because we haven't learned as many tools that would work in that complex domain, right? All our education, high school, all sorts of training, university, tends to be all about being able to predict outcome and do things through analysis, right? And not through experimentation. But there are actually a lot of tools that can actually work very quick. So I've worked with groups of, 20, 30 people, 60 people, 300, 400 people, where you can very quickly open up that what we call the collective intelligence and very quickly make sense of what are the patterns in the room, how people perceive the strategy that we have formulated, how well have we communicated. You can very quickly do that. On the website, and I will make sure that I'll give you the right links to the Canevin framework, you will find a fabulous tool called SenseMaker. SenseMaker is a survey tool where you do not use predominantly linear scales, but you use triangles. Let me give you an example. In my workshop, my masterclasses, I very often have an extended coffee break of about 40 minutes where people outside find whiteboards with triads and they stand around the triad, put a dot where they perceive, so because you're scoring now in a field, and then they tell each other why they score there. So one example is, in your meetings, do you advocate? Do you come with a point of view? Do you ask closed questions? Do you ask open questions? That's the second point in the triad. And the third one, we regularly give summaries. So then they put all these dots in, and then I make a photo, and then I project after the break for 40 minutes, I project what they have said. And I have learned that for most masterclasses where I do this, there is huge pattern around advocacy. So people debate points of views. They say, you're wrong, I'm right, and they go into this. But they don't ask a lot of open questions, explorative questions, and they don't often give summaries. And I ask the group, because I'm an external consultant like you, I ask them, what do you make of that? What is your sense making of that triangle? And then they say, well, obviously, we need to ask many more open questions. And it would help if we give at least twice in a meeting a summary of where we are. So they come with their own ideas of solutions. So this is another very, very powerful tool, where the SenseMaker tool is, it's a beautiful instrument where you can keep tab of what are people thinking, for example, about the strategy that is implemented, or what are people noticing in their interactions with their clients. And you submit narratives, and then you're being asked to plot in certain triads how you perceive this story. For example, one of the questions could be, is this a positive story or is this a critical story, a negative story? Let's say you have 300 stories about the company, and as a C-suite, you can say, give me all the positive stories. And what are the general themes that are emerging? Because that's obviously what is working. And then you can ask another question. How can we get more stories like this? Because you're going to do something that's already taking place elsewhere in the company. But now it's based on hard data, qualitative. And you can say, well, from the 300 stories, 275 were negative. It seems we have a problem, right? So you also have quantitative data. So you have a beautiful combination. So I would say that the only reason why we think it's difficult is because we don't necessarily have the tools and we are not trained to deal with complex problems. On the other hand, if you drive on the freeway, you're constantly dealing with uncertainty and complexity. You don't know the people who drive in front of you, who pass you on the left, who are driving behind you, and still you're able to get to your destination. Complete uncertainty, right? No control, which you have on the right side. How is that possible? Because you navigate. You're constantly checking. You navigate and you respond to what is actually happening. So if executives are willing to acknowledge and to recognize that control, controlling people, controlling projects has its limits, we should also be able to dance with our projects and with our people, then how do we design a good system? And I would suggest the following. The mistake that we have made in organizations that is based on how we have learned to solve problems, the scientific revolution always says, take problems apart and go to the smallest unit of analysis, right? And then if we can understand that, then we know how it all works. And what have we done in organizations? We analyze everything to the smallest unit of analysis, which is one individual. Oh, we need to hold them accountable. Here is my provocation. Organizations are not about individuals. They are about the interaction between individuals. Not a single individual can achieve the vision or the mission of a company. You have to lead interactions. And that would mean that if you use the Knevin framework and you realize we're working here in the complex domain, you shift from individual accountability to saying, hey, how can we lead interactions? How can we work at a different level than pushing on individual people?
It's a very different management model, right? Because if you are command and control, you can't say, today we're going to play complex. It's really about, as you say, about making sense, building collective commitment to do something versus generating data for the leader to decide. So what kind of leadership style would work across all of these domains?
We're looking for one potential best practice leadership style. So what is consistent with the framework is that you say it depends on the context. If you get the complaint in and your team is debating for hours, how should we deal with it? You can be very authoritative and say, wait a minute, we worked out a best practice. I want you to apply it. Don't waste any time here. So you can be much more authoritative. If you, on the other hand, have a complex problem where it's all unclear, as a leader, your point of view is equal to all the other points of views that are in the room. And you need to figure it out. That means that you as a leader need to shift into a much more facilitative mode. And your task becomes, can I surface the many perspectives in the room? And can we together make sense of it and define patterns? And you will find, and this is fascinating, I will give you an example. You will find that a lot of people think that their point of view is very different than somebody else's point of view by virtue of just using different words. So in 2007, 1 year before the financial crisis, I was working with a team at ING, and my task was later in the program, but I was in the room, and they were fighting because they were trying to make a decision and they had been at it for 6 months. After an hour, I had so much pain and there was so much anger in the room. I said, can I try something? So I asked them, what is the question you're trying to answer here? So I wrote it up. It was a very complex problem. Don't ask me what exactly the problem was. It was about some kind of software problem. I didn't understand it. So I just wrote up the question. I said, do we all agree that this is the question? Well, after 5 minutes of debate, yes, changing some words, that is the question. I gave everybody post-it notes. Now, you know this technique. I mean, it's one of the most basic techniques. I said, give your best answer to that question. One answer per post-it note. If you have three answers, you write down three answers on three post-it notes. Within 15 minutes, when they had all grouped it, them as a team, there were two major columns. And they looked at it in silence. And they said, oh my God, here is the answer to our problem. And so as a leader, if you don't have that simple skill of opening the collective intelligence using a very simple technique and be willing to say, I know as much as the others in this room, I am at this point equal, that's a very different leadership style. So your interventions then change. So I wouldn't say there is one single leadership style across all domains, but there is something about being honest and saying, I too am confused as a leader, or I have a perspective, but I'm sure you have perspectives as well, and I'm paying you also for hearing your perspective. So let's hear it. You have certain techniques where people don't have to say things out loud because some people are not so good at speaking loud in bigger groups and other people are, and so then they start to dominate. But if you use something as simple as this affinity diagram that we imported from Japan, you get that. So then your style is, okay, how can I dance with the group and open the collective intelligence? And that's very different than being authoritative, right?
Yeah. So we talked about clear, complicated, complex. Let's talk about the other dimensions. So I get it for complex things, probe, sense, respond, experiment, be adaptive. But sometimes things are really confusing.
Yes. If you as an individual, or let's say as a team, are confused, then the first thing is to acknowledge that and to say, we are all confused. We have lost our beacon. And here is where I think my somatic skills come in. The first thing that you have to do is, if the world around you is confusing and chaotic, maybe, how can you stay centered and grounded and give yourself space and bring your confusion that is also in your thinking? How can you bring this down? Why? Why is that important? If the entropy in the world increases, and entropy is just a measure, using physics here, is a measure for chaos. If the chaos increases, the only way for you to be able to deal with the chaos is to lower your internal entropy. Because if your mind is confused, only confusion can come out. If your mind is in disorder, you're going to make disorder. So you first have to center and ground yourself. And there are many techniques to be able to do that. But it starts with acknowledging, hey, we as a team, we're confused. So honesty then matters. And then from there, you can say, okay, what could be a next step? Now, I worked at a bank as a consultant, and when the big crisis broke out in 2008, there was one executive who had a top 50 meeting scheduled. And then this chaos happened. And he canceled the meeting. He said, because, well, I'm confused, and so I cannot lead a meeting. If only he had said, I'm confused, and I'm sure many of you are confused, let's find out together how we can make sense of this confusion. And then either you hire a facilitator if you don't have these collective intelligence opening skills, or you do it yourself if you can. So in the confused domain, start with centering and then work from there. In the chaotic domain, what you need to do is you need to impose order. In other words, you need to act. And this is where also your gut feel intelligence becomes important. You need to take an action. And then with that action, your aim is to gain some time so that you shift the problem from chaotic into a more complex, or maybe even already a complicated domain. Let me give you an example. As you know, you and I both went through the pandemic, and I was here in the state of New York, and we had a governor, Cuomo, and he did something that nobody had ever done before. So in the chaotic domain, you have to come with a novel practice. So there's no best practice. There is no good practice. There is no emergent practice, but you have to do something novel. This, nobody has ever done it before. One of the things he did was that in the state of New York, you have private hospitals and public hospitals, and they are completely separate systems. What he did, and he announced it at 12 o'clock, I was watching his, he said, what I'm going to do, he said, I'm going to create a war room. I'm having all the hospital beds from the public system and the private system in one database. And then we're going to manage people from upstate to downstate, because it was a capacity issue, right? Nobody had ever done it before. He didn't know even if it was even possible, but he pushed for it. So everything in him said, and later he explained, he had done in his career, he had dealt with many, many chaotic situations, crisis. So he had a lot of gut feel intuition and needed to act. So this is where, as a leader, you need to impose order. And you need to really honor your gut feel intuition, which comes from deep within, not from top down. And what I think is unfortunate with AI is that we keep focusing on rational, logical thinking. And it's very easy to drown out very subtle signals that come from the body. Like when we eat, when we have a good meal, at some point you know you're full. That's a knowing before thinking. You're not analyzing, can I still have those three broccoli? It's something that comes up. It's a very different way of knowing. And that's what we are talking about here.
If somebody listens to this episode, really gets curious and says, how do you get started?
It's not difficult to understand this. But what is difficult is, how are you going to help your organization change? You learn to open the collective intelligence by asking what I call the we question. You ask, what can we do to make the situation better? So you ask a we question, rather than saying, well, you must change that, which is again pointing to the individual. That's very often people get aggravated and all that. 10 to 1, if you think this framework is important for you, then the problem that you're dealing with or the challenge is going to be complex. So there are no right or wrong answers. There is just a next step. And one of the questions that is really powerful in a complex domain is, what is possible now? If you're doing this in an organizational context, you're looking really at organizational change. Organizational change, many consultants will say, well, I have for you the 8 steps. Or even better, I have 5 steps, you know, or 3 steps, right? That again, you should now realize that doesn't exist. What I need to do is, if I want to create a better team, let's say you're a manager and you have a team, ask the team, if we were a better team by the end of the month, what would change? What would be different for us? Now you are involving everybody, you're opening the collective intelligence. If we need to change our punishment and reward systems, how can we go about it? And you should make that subject to finding out what the next step of organizational change is going to be. And then some projects may result that you can do with old-fashioned project management. But that's very much what I would suggest. Find the basic information and honor a complexity. I work more from a we perspective rather than command and control and putting blame on individuals and accountability on individuals. That's what I would recommend.
It just made me think of a recent client experience where I think some of those questions might have been incredibly helpful, to be honest, because sometimes there's no right answer. There's just infinite possibilities. So what the framework does is it gives people permission to just acknowledge that there is no right answer. There's just the answer that we can come up with in the room here.
In the complex domain, the answer is a process of discovery, of exploration. One specific domain that must talk to many people in your audience is the health domain. In health, medicine was also really coming out of, we need to find the best protocol, best practice. And as a result, randomly controlled trials are aimed at finding a standard protocol. Now, my wife, Riva, as you know, has type 1 diabetes and she's had it for 54 years. There is no standard protocol. If a single doctor will tell her, okay, Riva, you wake up, give yourself 1 unit of insulin, and at 12 o'clock, give yourself two units before lunch, and in the evening, about 3.5. No, she has to make sense of what's happening. And if that's the case, then telling people with diabetes, you must control your blood sugars, that's insane, because you can't control your liver or your spleen or your stomach. It's complex. In medicine, when you have a chronic condition, which, you know, by the time you're 55, most people have 2 to 3 chronic conditions. There are no standard protocols. And if you know this as a patient, you will go to your doctor and you will use him or her in a very different way, in a much more intelligent way. You're going to say, can we do a little bit of experiment here? Okay, yes, I understand that 80% of the papers and the research says X, but I may be in that 20%. How can we find out? I'm not saying that your doctor is wrong. Doctors have been trained in a certain way, but they have not been trained in this much more complex thinking and treating people. And we need it, for example, in that domain as well. Now, to give you an example, if Riva has extreme high blood sugar, there is a best practice. If she has an extreme low blood sugar level, there is a best practice. But most of the time, she is in the complex domain.
If people want to learn more about your work, how you might be able to help, Tell us a little bit about what you do in your client practice.
My practice consists of a number of components. One is that I work as a somatic coach in a corporate context with teams, but also with individuals to help people, for example, be much more resilient when the world is chaotic. And I coach them also on leadership. I do individual and group coaching, and I do leadership development workshops.
Last question, Kinefin. What does the word mean? Is it an acronym? I have to ask.
Kinefin is a Welsh word, and it means your place of multiple belongings, meaning you are a father, but you're also a consultant, you're also a husband. So you have different identities depending on the context. So the word points to context matters. Dave Snowden used that word because a Japanese professor who was also writing about complexity actually used a Japanese word that made it kind of mysterious and all that. And he wanted to counter that with, in this case, a Welsh word. So it means your place of multiple belongings, and it points to context matters.
Wonderful. Listen, thank you so much, Baldwin. A pleasure to have you on the show. Look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you so much for having me, Thomas.
We hope you enjoyed this discussion. If you did, be sure to subscribe, like, share, or comment. Until next time, let's make work matter.